Good evening. This is a difficult one to start with. Literary allusions, semiotics, and concrete poetry. There are some sheets on the tables. I didn't want to be so arrogant as to print so many that there'd be a pile left pathetically with no one to read them, so there may not be enough to go round. Let me explain. Michael Field was the pseudonym of Catherine Bradley and her niece Edith Cooper, who lived, loved and wrote together for 40 years, from 1870. Their poetry was far more conventional than their lives. One, a sonnet entitled It Was Deep April, which is on the back of the sheet, has always struck me as a defiant and beautiful public expression of love. Michael Field was also the screen name of a friend of mine in New Zealand. I owe Virginia a great deal for her support and inspiration and wish her every happiness. This poem is about the impossibility of expressing feelings and the slippery black marks that constitute words. The more I use them, the more I brick myself in and distance myself from my audience and separate you from my feelings. There's a bit of technical terminology in there. English bond is a pattern in bricklaying. So for those of you not looking at a copy, and that includes my aunt in Canada who listens to this stuff on the internet, it's very block-like and bricky with cracks. To Michael Field, I have built a wall of black bricks laid in alternating stretchers, headers, English bonded. All you see are black blocks. Some are plain and others highly ornamented, meticulously patterned. I have filled the side that you can't see with decorations, symbols, pictures, undeciphered hieroglyphs. Each time I try to knock it down, it grows. Listen through this crack in the wall. Bricks aren't what I want to say, but my polymorphous, evanescent imagination needs space, a place where I can articulate unspeakable, unrequitable things, signs, dreams, wants, needs. Let me explain. There is no Catherine, no Edith here. No one's singing. No one nods attention, smiles at an unspoken joke, picks up a thread of conversation at my shoulder. Let me explain again. Two oceans, 10,000 miles, one continent, if you count north and south as one, separate two circles moving us from bed to breakfast, home to work, telling all to saying nothing. No crossings, only black blocks. Listen through this crack. Let me explain. This is another tricky one. I'm constantly challenged and angered by the pigeonholing of gender. Being bloody-minded and willfully naive, I set out to defy such constraints whenever I can. As a practicing Christian, by which I mean I'm crap at it and practicing very hard, I'm infuriated by assumptions that my God is a bloke. My vicar, Deborah, has been helpful with this. She can't tell me what God is, but she's sure he's not male. And that brought me to the impossibility of expressing me outside the constraints of gender. So instead of trying, I constructed a collage of other people's writing using sacred, literary, and autobiographical references from Genesis, Paradise Lost, The Tempest, Primo Levi's If This Is a Man, and Radcliffe Hall's The Well of Loneliness. But it's not enough for this poem to be clever. I like it more for the way that the words feel in my mouth and its iambic lilt, and I particularly hope my aunt agrees. If this is a man, you made me male and female in your image, loved my valour, contemplation, softness, sweet, attractive grace. But I am dust now, cursed, who loved you first. Too maimed to love, this thing I am is sin against the image I have dared resemble. You created, killed, demolished me. Cain, Caliban, a living corpse that lies with corpses. No more in man's eyes than a thing. My language lacks the words for your offence. This one you'll be pleased to hear is much simpler. John and Helen Esbier were my neighbours. John's now dead, but he and Helen were an inspiration to me as I looked towards old age. John and Helen. John, while my left leg lay beneath me like a broken twig, and I lay underneath the apple tree I tried to prune, entwined in the ladder I'd assumed would hold me, told me how he'd climbed his fir tree 40 or 50 feet, and how he'd clawed and hacked and ice axed up a mountain. John was 73. At his funeral tea, I talked to Helen, fellow climber. Yes, she said, we did. But not again. Not now. And she, like the Nivea-covered leaf, never crumpled, never cracked, now never seems to age. I'm finishing off with my newest poem, which is about yearning. This is something I don't do much because I've got to a stage in life when I have almost everything I could want. Family, friends, prosperity, health and love. In another poem I've written, A Waste of Time, I refer to the place of the longed-for one, the unattainable love in poetry, particularly in sonnets. Here is my attempt to create three situations where there is need, longing, and absolutely no certainty that the feelings will be returned. Love positions. I'm caught in my cross garters, crossing the square from where you said we'd meet to where I started, between you're here and nowhere, eyeing the lines of diners, crossing back to where you might be, waiting, recrossing, retracing the lines to find your face, then losing mine, outside in the rain, ridiculous, my yellow stockings hanging at my ankles. Here, at the point between my question and your answer, between asking and knowing, please and thank you, offer and acceptance, wanting and having, send and receive, message and response, dreaming and waking, trial and error, maybe or maybe not. I hold my breath and count the possibilities. At the edge of the shore, in the roar of the sea, shout of the wind, hiss of the sand, there's no one here but me and you at the table. Words, birds on the beach, encircle each other, lost in the clatter of cups, gaggia roar and hiss of cappuccino. And as we speak, all sound is drowned by your eyes, your mouth, your movement.
Thank you. Thank you.